terror. Terror in the night. The whipping, howling, unforgiving winds crash into the clouds, and rain falls no matter where you turn. There is no escape. No escaping the true horror. A sudden silence, and then screaming thunder, lightning, blood, tornadoes, famine, pestilence, fire, earthquake! Giving way to hazy afternoon sunshine. I'll be back with a 5-day forecast after this.
Hey everybody, it's 6 past the hour, and this is Indirect Democracy. On this episode of Indirect Democracy, we take a look at the founding of independence, plus the queen of all BS. We're also going to have the global warming update, a new sponsor, and of course, the What a Weenie Award. And welcome. Welcome to podcast number 35 of Indirect Democracy, found at www.indirectdemocracy.com. I am your host. My name is David. And as always, Indirect Democracy is a very proud member of the Progressive Podcast Network. You can find the Progressive Podcast Network and all the great podcasts that are affiliated with this association at progressivepodcastnetwork.org. I'm laughing because the dog's been quiet most of the morning while I've been preparing my research for this particular episode, and the second I start recording, they start fighting. So I'm just getting a big kick out of it. I guess you cannot fight certain things. So it's been a hell of a time since the last time I recorded back in April, and every week it seemed like I was preparing for something new to talk about. I was preparing for Sotomayor. I was preparing for the killings that occurred, the ones that dealt with Dr. Tiller, and then the ones that dealt with the killing at the Holocaust Museum over in Washington, D.C. to talk about hate speech. Preparing all these things, getting ready for a whole bunch of things that happened. And then it seems like health care, the war, everything just exploded at the end of going into June. And then all of a sudden, in something that I don't think that anybody actually saw, here comes Iran. And the elections in Iran, I think, turned everything sort of upside down because we were watching everything just change. And I was getting ready for that. And then all of a sudden came the news story that I'll be getting into. But before I do that, and I realize I'm already getting ready to just jump in, full stream, just boom, into everything. As always, it's time to talk about, and I promise, I'm sorry about the way this has already started, sort of, you know, it's like going from one place to the other. But I'm going to start talking about the global warming update. As you know, if you are a listener to the podcast or are brand new, every podcast begins with a new story dealing with global warming. This one comes from the Wall Street Journal. It is dated July 3rd, 2009. The title of this article is "The EPA Silences a Climate Skeptic" by Kimberly Strassel. Wherever Jim Hansen is right now, whatever speech the censored NASA scientist is giving, perhaps he'll find time to mention the plight of Alan Carlin, though don't count on it. Mr. Hansen, as everyone in the solar system knows, is the director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies. Starting in 2004, he launched a campaign against the Bush administration, claiming it was censoring his global warming thoughts and fiddling with science. It was all a bit of a hoot, given Mr. Hansen was already a world-famous devotee of the theory of man-made global warming, a reputation earned with some 1,400 speeches he'd given, many while working for Mr. Bush. But it gave Democrats a fun talking point, one the Obama team later picked up. So much so that one of President Barack Obama's first act was a memo to agencies demanding new transparency in government and science. The nominee to head the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, Lisa Jackson, joined in, exclaiming, "As administrator, I will ensure EPA's efforts to address the environmental crisis of today are rooted in three fundamental values: science-based policies and program adherence to the rule of law, and overwhelming transparency." In case anyone missed the point, Mr. Obama took another shot at his predecessors in April, vowing that the days of science taking a backseat to ideology are over. Except, that is, when it comes to Mr. Carlin, a senior analyst in the EPA's National Center for Environmental Economics and a 35-year veteran of the agency. In March, the Obama EPA prepared to engage the global warming debate in an astounding new way by issuing an endangerment finding on carbon. It establishes that carbon is a pollutant and thereby gives the EPA the authority to regulate it, even if Congress doesn't act. Around this time, Mr. Carlin and a colleague presented a 98-page analysis arguing the agency should take another look at the science behind man-made global warming is inconclusive at best. The analysis noted that global temperatures were on a downward trend, it pointed out problems with climate models, it highlighted new research that contradicts apocalyptic scenarios. We believe our concerns and reservations are sufficiently important to warrant a serious review of the science by EPA. The response to Mr. Carlin was an email from his boss forbidding him from any direct communication with anyone outside of his office with regard to this analysis. When Mr. Carlin tried again to disseminate his analysis, Mr. McGarland, his boss, decreed, "The administrator and the administration have decided to move forward on endangerment, and your comments do not help the legal or policy case for this decision. I can only see one impact of your comments given where we are in the process, and that would be a very negative impact on our office." The writer continues with saying, "The Bush administration's great sin for the record was daring to issue reports that laid out the administration's official position on global warming. That the reports did not contain the most doomsday predictions led to howls that the Bush politicals were suppressing and ignoring career scientists." She continues, "Unable to defend the EPA's actions, the climate change guru led by anonymous EPA officials is in doing what is best, trashing Mr. Carlin as a denier. Here is, we are told, only an economist. He is, in fact, holds a degree in physics from Caltech. It wasn't his job to look at the issue. He, in fact, works in an office tasked with informing important policy decisions with sound economics and other sciences. His study was full of sham science. The majority of, in fact, references peer-reviewed studies. Where's Mr. Hansen and his defense of scientific freedom when you really need him? Mr. Carlin is instead an explanation for why the science debate is little reported in this country. The professional penalty for offering a contrary view to elites like Al Gore is a smear campaign. The global warming crowd likes to deride skeptics as the equivalent of the Catholic Church refusing to accept the Copernican theory. The irony is that today, it is those who dare critique the new religion of human-induced climate change who face the Inquisition." I had to read you this because upon reading it this morning, I couldn't stop laughing. This is the same, I don't think it's a coincidence, this comes from the editorial pages of the Wall Street Journal, which is now owned by Fox News. This is the policy, this is the former administration, these are the people who came out and at one point were redlining. This isn't a thing of just telling people not to talk about, this was actively taking a pen or anything that they had and just crossing out things in environmental reports. And if it wasn't crossing out issues with a big black marker in environmental reports, these were the people that were hiring members of ExxonMobil and other oil conglomerates to act as heads of these departments and write up these reports. This wasn't just the fox guarding the hen house. This was the fox actually guarding the farm. You know, this was serious censorship of science back in the days because the discussion of science didn't matter. We were talking about people who were serious part of an ideology that was either based on one of two things, either greed and manipulation of climate resources so this way they can make as much money as possible, or two, these were the people who were probably, and this is not to put anything down on Christians because I happen to have faith and believe it's like in the theory of a God as well, but this was the serious Christo-fascist zombie brigade who were not only looking forward to the end of the world but were in some ways maybe trying to help it happen through their leader, George Bush, who I'm positive they thought was the right guy to get them there. This part of an old Marc Maron joke. For this writer to come out and say that this administration is censoring science is laughable. It's not even laughable at best. It's just pure laughable. Because it was the former administration that did all the aforementioned to make sure that any studies, any work, any positive contribution to working on climate change was not only pushed to the side, but crossed over with a big black pen. Telling somebody not to put out a report is completely different than crossing it out completely, or having somebody in charge who's just going to say, you're not even going to write that report at all. I'm sure Mr. Carlin's work should be given some look into, because if there's something that can be brought forward, yeah, of course, every aspect should be looked into. That's just proper science. But to say that this administration is now censoring science, I think, is just funny. And that's, I think, one of the great things about Fox News. You have to love Rupert Murdoch and Fox News and their new little affiliate of the Wall Street Journal, because that's all they really do is just promote right-wing agendas, and they can't even be subtle about it anymore. And now an ad for a brand new show, actually not that new, but one of the newest members of the Progressive Podcast Network. Here is a promo for Progressive News Radio.
Hi, it's Jim Swanson from ProgressiveNewsRadio.com. I'd like to invite you to give us a listen and get some news, politics, commentary, interviews, and more. Now, if you're getting your news from only the mainstream media, you're getting what the empty-suited blowhards want you to know. We try to give you what you need to know about politics, the economy, ecology, and the latest world and national news and more. Plus, special reports from great news outlets like the American News Project, the Real News Network, and Go Left TV. Features such as the Media Matters Minute with Ben Fischel, the Progressive Point of View from the editor of the Progressive Magazine, Matt Rothschild. And with interviews, we try to bring something of interest for everyone. Guests in the past have included Representative Dennis Kucinich of Ohio, Representative Robert Wexler of Florida, Los Angeles real estate broker Robert Eisenberg on surviving the mortgage meltdown. Log on to ProgressiveNewsRadio.com. That's ProgressiveNewsRadio.com. A proud member of the Progressive Podcast Network.
Okay, so here it is. I'm recording this on the morning of July 4th, 2009. And as we all know, July 4th is Independence Day. Now, one of the things I like to do around this time of year is being Independence Day is I actually am a big fan of reading some of the works of the founders of this country. And for a lot of people who are going, founders, oh, they're this and that. Oh, you know what? Let's just look at the terms, look at the work that created this great idea called the United States of America. And it's, I've always said it's one of the great things about this country is that it was founded on an idea. It wasn't founded on a language or nationalism. And I know a lot, like I said, a lot of people are going, oh, it was founded by a bunch of white slave owners. Let's just stick to the concept of an idea, because it was ideas that not only formed and forged this nation as to what it is and what it could be and what it can continue to be and what we hope it can be, but is this same notion, the same belief in freedom that causes people throughout the world to hope for what it is that we provide as an example. Not what we always do, it's what we can provide as an example. So in going through that, I was looking through recently Common Sense and the works of Tom Paine. And I'm not going to get too much into his work because there's other stuff I'd like to read from. But I wanted to read from this. I think it's just apropos. It's from the very beginning. The cause of America, and this is from Common Sense, the cause of America is in a great measure the cause of all mankind. Many circumstances hath and will arise which are not local, but universal, and through which the principles of all lovers of mankind are affected, and in the event of which their affections are interested. The laying a country desolate with fire and sword, declaring war against the natural rights of all mankind, and extirpating the defender thereof from the face of the earth is the concern of every man to whom nature hath given the power of feeling. Of which class, regardless of party censure, is the, and I think there's supposed to be something more to that. But there's also more, and it talks about society. Society is produced by our wants, and government by our wickedness. The former promotes our happiness positively by uniting our affections, the latter negatively by restraining our vices. The one encourages intercourse, the other creates distinctions. The first is the patron, the last is the punisher. Society in every state is a blessing, but government, even in its best state, is but a necessary evil. In its worst state, an intolerable one, for when we suffer or are exposed to the same miseries by government which we might expect in a country without government, our calamity is heightened by reflecting that we furnish the means by which we suffer. Government, like dress, is the badge of lost innocence. The palaces of kings are built on the ruins of the bowers of paradise. For were the impulses of conscience clear, uniform and irresistibly obeyed, man would need no other lawgiver. But that not being the case, he finds it necessary to surrender up a part of his property to furnish means for the protection of the rest. And this he is induced to do by the same prudence which in every other case advises him out of two evils to choose the least. Wherefore, security being the true design and end of government, it unanswerably follows that whatever form thereof appears most likely to ensure it to us, with the least expense and greatest benefit, is preferable to all others. I think I like that first portion, because when we're talking about security isn't just that isn't just what is put in place to keep us from physical harm, but the one we hold inside us as well. And that also deals not just with the physical, but it deals with our minds and our hearts. And I bring this up because it is that ability for us to have this conversation, what I am discussing with you, this ability for us to share these ideas. We have in place and put into place a type of security that allows us, through the United States Constitution, to speak with each other and to share these ideas with each other, free from duress by the government, free from the ability of stopping what it is that we need to say outside of some exigent circumstance, you know, which would possibly be a crime. And I think we know what that is, threatening the life of presidents, shouting fire in a crowded theater, walking up and saying fighting words to somebody. We are free to share these things because it is not just part of the freedom of mankind to express those things, but because we are guaranteed those things. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep up links for Common Sense, the Declaration of Independence, and the United States Constitution up with this podcast. I'll have those links. And I encourage you, go to these sites and read them, because every now and then, it's just good to remind ourselves about the very words, especially on a day like today, that caused us to fight for something, not just back in 1776 or 1812 or 1865 or 1914 or in the 1940s, or even, depending on how you feel about it, even if you believe or do not believe that the fight that is occurring over in the Middle East and Afghanistan is a fight for freedom, it is the constant struggle within us all every day. So in ending this little discussion, I want to read from you what is just a great piece of writing, and it's part of the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its power in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate the government long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. This is my favorite line. A prince, whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant, is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. I'm going to skip a little bit. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America and General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do, in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right, ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with the firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortune, and our sacred honor. That's just good writing. And now a musical break. Okay, so I think we all understand why it is that I had to play that music. One of the biggest news of this past week was the untimely death of Michael Jackson. Now, long time ago, I mentioned that I attended a conference when I was going to Cal State Fullerton. I was a freshman at the time. And it was about the time that Lucille Ball passed away. So this gives you an idea of my age in general, although I think it's listed anyway on the websites. That was back in 1989 when she passed away. I was a freshman in college. When I went to this conference, one of the great questions that was brought up was, why had the news media spent a week discussing the death of Lucille Ball? And I'll never forget that answer, and I've shared this before, is that the journalist that they asked, and she was one of the big names at the time on the local TV stations, she said, because, and this is a great answer, it was easy news. And there is no getting past what is happening. It's easy news. I understand that. I see it. I think we all see it. It is so much easier to spend time talking about Michael Jackson than it is to discuss the moves of the president when it comes to Iran and the discussion that goes back and forth with that. Of course, you could just go on an ongoing rant about what the Republicans believe and what the Democrats believe, or that maybe the president is just saying, let's just stay out of this and let them take care of this on their own. This is their freedom. This is their independence. This is their election, their democracy. Let them take care of this without them blaming us for anything. Maybe the president is playing chess while the rest of them are trying to figure out how to set up tic-tac-toe. I'm talking about the Republicans. But I'm shifting away from the discussion about Michael Jackson. It is easy news. But there's also something to be said about moments, cultural moments that define us as a people. Something that links us together in ways that we just don't understand or appreciate on a level that is so deep that we don't even recognize it when it's happening. Now, I'm not saying that the coverage of Michael Jackson isn't overboard. I think it is a little bit. The thing is that music connects us on a level unlike any other. Depending on your favorite movie, you'll remember when you saw it. You'll remember that you saw it on a particular time. But there's a connection to a song. You'll remember what it was like to dance with somebody to a song. You'll remember the feelings that surrounded, maybe when a certain song played, when somebody close to you passed away, or when you danced at your wedding, or even if it was, I can still remember exactly where I was and the moment when, like millions of other people across the country, I stopped to watch the Thriller video when it came out, including that little blurb he had to put out, the disclaimer beforehand, saying he didn't believe in Satanism or the occult or anything, it was just a video. I don't think it's a bad thing for people to be discussing Michael Jackson, because in so many ways music connects us. And his was one of the great artistic contributions of our time. He was, as somebody close to me said, the Elvis of our time, the Elvis of our generation. He was one of Gen X's absolutely greatest performers. And I say that being a Prince fan. But you cannot deny when somebody brings something to us as a collective that is so strong, so, you know, overwhelming, and so indelible that we have to stop for a moment and recognize it. Because if we don't, I think we lose a little part of what makes, you know, just the smallest artistic moments, the smallest emotional moments, the things that connect us on those levels. I think that's what makes every little moment great, and just to appreciate them, I think even now is fine. To remember Michael Jackson, what it was like to be a teenager when those songs came out, I think it's just fine. Let the man rest in peace. I think there's going to be enough news stories after the fact about his family and how he died, and that's not important, but maybe it's okay for this moment, even though there are a lot more important things to talk about, including healthcare and Iran that could still be discussed. But for a moment, maybe as a country, it's okay for us to just take a moment and mourn the loss of something that defined our childhood, growing up, maybe a first dance at a wedding, maybe a first dance with that person you had a big crush on in high school. And unfortunately for me, that awful theme of Man in the Mirror that played when I graduated. But those are the things that connect us together. I think it's okay that we just remember his passing. But not without talking about what is the big news story of this weekend, and the reason why I think I mostly had to just say, you know what, stop working on one thing or the other. There'll be time to talk about Judge Sotomayor, there'll be time to talk about so many other things, but the one that got me, the one that just threw everything for a loop, was Sarah Palin. The now soon-to-be former governor of Alaska announced her resignation yesterday, and what I'm going to do right now is play for you a clip from that resignation speech.
And effectiveness. That's not how I'm wired. I'm not wired to operate under the same old politics as usual. I promised that 4 years ago, and I meant it. That's not what is best for Alaska at this time. I'm determined to take the right path for Alaska, even though it is unconventional and it's not so comfortable. With this announcement that I'm not seeking re-election, I've determined it's best to transfer the authority of governor to Lieutenant Governor Parnell. And I am willing to do this so that this administration, with its positive agenda and its accomplishments and its successful road to an incredible future for Alaska, so that it can continue without interruption and with great administrative and legislative success. My choice is to take a stand and affect change and not just hit our head against the wall and watch valuable state time and money, millions of your dollars, go down the drain in this new political environment. Rather, we know we can affect positive change outside government at this moment in time on another scale and actually make a difference for our priorities. And so we will, for Alaskans and for Americans. Let me go back quickly to a comfortable analogy for me, and that's sports, basketball. And I use it because you are naive if you don't see a full court press from the national level picking away right now. A good point guard, here's what she does. She drives through a full court press, protecting the ball, keeping her head up because she needs to keep her eye on the basket. And she knows exactly when to pass the ball so that the team can win. And that is what I'm doing, keeping our eye on the ball. That represents sound priorities. Remember, they include energy independence and smaller government and national security and freedom. And I know when it's time to pass the ball for victory. And I've given my reasons now, very candidly, truthfully, and my last day won't be for another few weeks, so the transition will be very smooth. In fact, we look forward to swearing in Sean Parnell up there in Fairbanks at the conclusion of our governor's picnic at the end of the month. And I really don't want to disappoint anyone with this announcement, not with the decision that I have made. All I can ask is that you trust me with this decision and know that it is no more politics as usual. And some Alaskans, it seemed today, maybe they don't mind wasting public dollars and state time, but I do. And I cannot stand here as your governor and allow the millions of dollars and all that time go to waste just so that I can hold the title of governor. And I don't know if my children are going to allow it anyway. Some are going to question the timing of this, and let me just say that this decision has been in the works for a while. In fact, this decision comes after much consideration, prayer and consideration. And finally, I polled the most important people in my life, my kids, where the count was unanimous. Well, in response to asking, hey, do you want me to make a positive difference and fight for all our children's future from outside the governor's office? It was four yeses and one hell yeah. And the hell yeah sealed it. And someday I'll talk about the details of that. I think, though, much of it for the kids had to do with recently seeing their baby brother Trig mocked and ridiculed by some pretty mean-spirited adults recently. And by the way, I sure wish folks could ever understand all that we can learn, all of us, from someone like Trig. I know he needs me, but I know that I need him even more. And what a child can offer to set priorities right, know that time is precious. The world needs more Trigs, not fewer. My decision was also fortified during this most recent trip to Kosovo and Landstuhl to visit our wounded soldiers overseas. Those who truly sacrifice themselves in war for our freedom and our security. And we can all learn from our selfless, selfless troops. They're bold and they don't give up and they take a stand and they know that life is short, so they choose not to waste time. They choose to be productive and to serve something greater than self and to build up their families and their states and our great country. These troops and their important missions now, there is where truly the worthy causes are in this world, and that's where our public resources should be, our public priority, with time and resources spent on that, not on this superficial, wasteful political blood sport. So may we all learn from them. Really, we've just got to put first things first. And first things first, as governor, I love my job and I love Alaska. And it hurts to make this choice, but I'm doing what's best for Alaska, and I have explained why. Though I think of the saying on my parents' refrigerator, a little magnet that says, "Don't explain, your friends don't need it, and your enemies won't believe you anyway." But I've given my reasons. It's no more politics as usual, and I'm taking my fight for what's right for Alaska in a new direction. Now, despite this, I sure don't want anyone, any Alaskan, dissuaded from entering politics after seeing this real climate change that began in August. No, we need hardworking average Americans fighting for what's right, and I will support you because we need you, and you can affect change, and I can too on the outside. We need those who will respect our Constitution, where government's supposed to serve from the bottom up and not move toward this top-down big government takeover, but rather will be protectors of individual rights, who also have enough common sense to acknowledge when conditions have drastically changed, and they're willing to call an audible and pass the ball when it's time so the team can win. And that's what I'm doing. Remember, Alaska, America is now more than ever looking north to the future, and it'll be good. So God bless you. And from me and from my family to all Alaska, you have my heart. And we're going to be in really great hands, the capable hands of our Lieutenant Governor Sean Parnell. And Lieutenant General Craig Campbell then will assume the role of Lieutenant Governor. And it's my promise to you that I will always be standing by, ready to assist. We have a good, positive agenda for Alaska. Take the words of General MacArthur. He said, "We are not retreating, we are advancing in another direction." So with that, I'm going to hand this over to our good Lieutenant Governor. And again, I say thank you and God bless you, Alaska.
No! Get out of here with that cheese! You're a creep! Go away! We're having a good time until you start it first! Go have some coffee with cream or something! Because I'll tell you something! This is a happy place!
And of course I had to throw in the happy place statement there. That was the most rambling, idiotic statement I've heard from somebody come out from giving a resignation speech since the time I was hoping that Larry Craig was going to resign, because at least his had some semblance of having a point. It was really just like listening to somebody just freak out as they were talking. My wife, who is just wonderful and beautiful, actually pointed out as I'm watching this, because you can't make out what's happening. She's the first one to point out the heavy breathing that you heard, the inability to point, because it sounds like she's trying to hold in her emotions or hold in her story or just try to figure out where to go, was the clearest sign by the, except for the fact that I think, of course, when I was hearing that she immediately resigned, I went, oh, somebody's got the goods on her, somebody's got the criminal goods on her. You know, it was just to really hear that after each little breath that my wife pointed out to me, that I went, wow, it must be really bad. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play for you this clip from MSNBC News, David Schuster on Hardball, talking about any type of investigation that's about to happen. And here's that clip.
Beating that she's been getting from lawmakers in Alaska. Joining us now on the phone is Shannon Moore. She's a progressive radio talk show host in Anchorage, Alaska. She's also a Huffington Post contributor. Shannon, why don't you put this in some perspective? What was it that the lawmakers in Alaska have been hounding Sarah Palin over? And the ethics investigations, were they completely out of left field, or did Sarah Palin contribute to essentially inviting those ethics investigations?
Oh, it's nice to talk to you again, David. There's a lot of questions there. I think it's very interesting that Politico is reporting that she's been taking a beating from lawmakers here in Alaska. That simply isn't true. They're out of session right now. We did have an investigation last year into the Troopergate scandal, and she was found guilty of abuse of power, yet they didn't do anything with that $100,000 investigation. So they haven't been hounding her at all. They've been very supportive, I think, of trying to get a gas line for Alaskans.
So what do you think is that really? Well, I was going to ask you then, what do you think is that really going on? Let's put aside then the political reporting. You're in Alaska. You've got a better sense, I think, on the ground as far as what's going on. The legislature's not in session. What do you think is really going on here then with Governor Palin?
I think that there have been rumors here, and certainly I've been covering the governor on the radio and in became governor, and I think that the truth be told, there have been so many things that were Teflon for her, whether it was her daughter's pregnancy or all these sort of other issues that were coming up. And I think she's been really Teflon on the personal sort of dramas and tabloid things that have played out. There is a scandal rumor here that there is a criminal investigation into some activities, and that's been rumored here for about, I don't know, probably 6 weeks or 2 months. And I'm not sure if that has more to do with this. It seemed today that she was, and I've watched her since she was campaigning. I've never seen her as nervous, as sort of, like Red Bulls into a press conference as I did today. And I think she was really actually doing damage control for news that's coming up later.
Okay, that gets to the idea that there is another shoe to drop. Obviously, as you point out, these are rumors and unconfirmed reports, but the fact that people in Alaska have been talking about something, I wonder if you can essentially give us the contours as far as what they've been talking about or what the fears are as far as Sarah Palin supporters or her family as far as what may be coming.
Well, I think that, you know, if there are, with the rumors that are going around that there are investigations right now into alleged criminal or, unsavory behavior on a criminal level, then I think that those things need to take time, and that's definitely a lesson that Alaskans have learned, having so many indictments of our politicians. Everybody jumps the gun, and then pretty soon they're let out of jail. And that's, you know, we've seen that. So I think that if it's true, if the rumors are true, then they need to play out in that time. But I cannot imagine that anything else would have Sarah Palin backing out of her governorship when Governor Bush and Governor Clinton both ran for office. They both turned their states over to their lieutenant governor. Sarah Palin never did that when she was running from VP. She actually was governing at 140 characters or less from her BlackBerry. So in watching this all play out, I actually think that the rumors seem like there could be something to it. And like I said, we'll just have to wait. But I can't imagine anything personal that would make her step down as governor of Alaska.
Intriguing and terrific reporting from Shannon Moore. And
Okay, so like I said, there just cannot be any doubt that somebody somewhere has the goods on her. Somebody somewhere has something that has her in a pickle. I went to the Alaskan Daily News, the Anchorage Daily News, actually, to look up some news articles and see what they thought. And this is from their opinion section. Our view, Palin calls it quits. Alaskans shocked by decision, baffled by explanation. Shock was the order of the day Friday when Governor Sarah Palin announced her resignation. Many Alaskans had speculated that she would seek a second term as governor to clear the decks for a presidential run in 2012. But no one expected her to walk away from the job within a year and a half to go. After the shock, confusion. Governor Palin baffled Alaskans with her explanation that having decided not to seek a second term, she doesn't want to be a lame duck until December 2010. That explanation is more lame than the duck. The governor spoke as if her decision not to seek a second term automatically left her irrelevant, when the fact is the rest of her term's quality was up to her. The state has important work ahead: gas line, fiscal plan, education, health care, opportunities on the alternative energy and natural resources front. She ran for office to do that work, and there's the matter of the Alaska Constitution, which she often invokes. She was elected to serve 4 years, not 2 years and change. She spoke as if she were making a sacrifice for the good of Alaska, but it's hard to see how. It's one thing when an elected official tries for a higher office, wins, and leaves the old post. It's another when an elected official, eyeing higher office or some other pursuit, decides to quit in midterm. That looks like self-service, not public service. Lacking any other family or political reason for resigning, the governor's explanation simply does not make sense. Her vice presidential run in the Circus of Troopergate changed her life and changed the political landscape in Alaska. Relations with the legislature, never ideal, grew worse. She was often described by lawmakers as disengaged. She seemed to keep looking south even after returning north in November. She was a more fierce partisan of the Republican right. Yet there were highlights for Alaska too, most recently the decision by Exxon to cooperate with TransCanada to make a gas pipeline work. That partnership wasn't made by the state but was encouraged by Palin's gas line team and is an example of the kind of heavy lifting that could have taken any lame duck quality out of the governor's last 17 months. Palin is a charismatic leader with a devoted national following and ambition to match, so there's no surprise if she sees a future for herself beyond Alaska, but we thought she'd finish her work on the home front. She hasn't made clear why she won't. Bottom line, governor's explanation for resignation doesn't make sense. And this was one of my favorites. This was from Fox News, an opinion article by Peter Ferreira. It's entitled, Sarah Palin Outsmarts. Sarah Palin's resignation as governor of Alaska is a brilliant liberating move for her career and a potential turning point for the national conservative movement. Sarah Palin's resignation as governor of Alaska is a brilliant liberating move for her career. The biggest problem with her responsibility as governor of Alaska is that the state is so far away from the rest of America. Nice way to put down Alaska. No one hears of the good work she's been doing there, and the left is free to paint their own false caricature of her. And because of the long distance in her family as well as governing responsibilities, she can get down to the lower 48 enough to build her own national presence. I am hoping she spends 2 weeks of every month now touring the states doing fundraisers for a sweeping Republican revival in 2010 that is now developing. I hope she establishes a new national grassroots organization to fight for conservative causes, and I hope she starts a new national think tank in Washington. I hope so too. A think tank by Sarah Palin, I hope it's headed up by Dan Quayle. She could pick up the mantle for social conservatism for the late Paul Weyrich in Washington, reinvigorating the pro-life cause and defense of traditional values. She could advocate sane, grown-up energy policies through these organizations favoring increased production of traditional as well as alternative energy, including nuclear power, while opposing fruitcake ideas like cap-and-trade taxes and runaway corporate welfare that would bring back Jimmy Carter's sin fuels. She also would lead the nation's mothers to oppose mandating replacement of incandescent light bulbs with the new mercury poison gas bulbs. Here's hoping as well that she devotes these organizations to advancing the economics of Milton Friedman, Art Laffer, and Jack Kemp rather than the outdated failed economics of John Maynard Keynes that Obama advocates as if there were never any alternative. She should also be a staunch advocate for peace through strength and rebuilding our nuclear deterrent rather than Obama's policy of nuclear disarmament. And here's hoping she becomes a new powerful voice for Israel, making new alliances with Jewish voters. If she does all that, the left won't be making jokes about her anymore, just like they stopped joking about Ronald Reagan long after in 1984 and Newt Gingrich in 1994. That's not true. I'm going to be making fun of Newt Gingrich in a little bit. But I couldn't help but find it. It didn't take much when I found this article by TheExaminer.com. Sarah Palin faces federal indictment for embezzlement. Alaska Governor Palin, who announced her resignation from office today, may be facing a federal indictment for embezzlement, according to Huffington Post blogger Shannon Moore. Moore is reporting the so-called iceberg scandal involves the use of Wasilla Sports Complex building materials for Palin's residence during her tenure as mayor. According to Moore, both structures, it is said, featured the exact same windows, same wood, and same products. The Daily Coast says federal investigators have been looking into this for some time, and indictments could be imminent. Max Blumenthal, writing for the Daily Beast, said, Alaska political circles are abuzz about a building contract which has close ties to Palin and her husband Todd. According to Blumenthal, federal investigators seizing paperwork from SBS in recent months searching for evidence that Palin and her husband Todd steered away parts of his contracts to the well-connected company in exchange for gifts like the construction of their home. The home was built just 2 months before Palin began campaigning for governor, a job which would have enhanced her power to grant building contracts in the wide-open state. According to Blumenthal, just months before Palin left Wasilla to campaign for governor, she awarded a contract to build a $13 million Wasilla sports complex, the most expensive building project in Wasilla history. The contract cost an additional $1.3 million in legal fees and threw it into severe long-term debt. For SBS, however, the bloated contract was a cash cow. Andrea Mitchell reported on MSNBC that according to people very close to Palin, she is told that she is to get out of politics, period. She is fed up with politics. She doesn't like her life. The overwhelming thing to me about this entire thing, criminal possible indictments coming up, not running for re-election, possibly seeking a senatorial election, maybe running for president in 2012. The thing that gets me about this altogether, no matter the cause, no matter the reason, similar to my feelings about Governor Sanford, it isn't the affair that bothers me. It's the dereliction of duty. Him taking off to be with his girlfriend, lying about the girlfriend, being a hypocrite about how he talks about adultery when you think about his run as a congressperson during the Clinton impeachment. It isn't about him having the affair. It's about the dereliction of duty. It's the fact that he took off for 7 days when it is possible that any emergency could have occurred in which his state needed him. And that's the same thing I have with her. We're not sure what was going to happen. Maybe she would have had to have resigned anyway. Maybe something would have occurred. But to just quit is what is the amazing thing about this story. Lots of people have been lame ducks. Lots of people have run for other office and still held their post. Lots of people have stuck to their guns. The enduring legacy about Sarah Palin will be that she quit. I mean, there couldn't be anything more obvious. She is obviously in some type of trouble, real political and criminal trouble. I mean, it couldn't be more obvious than it was when Governor Sanford said that he was going to go hiking in the Appalachian Trail. When his wife came out and said, "I don't know where he is, I don't care where he is," I mean, anybody with just, you know, half a shred just went, "Girlfriend." It's obvious. Like, it's, who put out those emails about Sanford? What's the wife? That's no big deal. Who had access to his personal emails and would put them out there to embarrass the man? The wife. And this is the same thing. This character, this governor, that one over there, as John McCain would say, she's done something really awful. She's done something really bad. And it doesn't take much to realize that it's criminal. I don't want to say that I'm looking forward to it, but I am looking forward to hearing about this, because after listening to this speech by Sarah Palin, after reading the full transcript, which I will keep up on the homepage for, if you look in the research links for Indirect Democracy at indirectdemocracy.com, just look for the research links, podcast 31 through 35, you will find this transcript. I dare you to read this transcript, because after reading it and realizing it, I was only struck with one thing in my head, and that was a joke I heard on Break Room Live with Mark Maron and Sam Cedar, where one of the people that wrote in wrote a joke. He said, "What's the difference between Sarah Palin's mouth and Sarah Palin's vagina? Only 20% of what comes out of her vagina is retarded." And yes, I know I'm going to get a lot of, "Oh my God, he's making fun of Trigg." Wasn't making fun of Trigg. I'm making, well, okay, maybe I'm making fun of Trigg a little bit. But just, it's unbelievable what comes out of her mouth. Because there's one thing to be a liar, and then there's another thing to be the queen of all BS. Okay, let's see, now it's time for our sponsor. As we all know, there were some serious things that occurred over the past few months, dealing with the deaths of Dr. Tiller over in Kansas, and of course, the shooting and death of the guard over at the Washington, D.C. National Holocaust Museum. I got a word from a sponsor who wanted to put out a ad about the new Bibles that are out there for people to subscribe to these beliefs, and here is that ad.
Greetings and peace, brothers and sisters. It is your reverend, the Reverend Digadong, coming to you, talking to you about the Bible, the good book. But let me ask you, son, in those moments when you feel a need to smite down the wicked, to call upon their unrighteous with the Lord's power, you find yourself going, "This good book is filled with too much talk of peace and love." Well, that is why the Reverend Digadong brings to you the King Digadong version of the Bible, filled with passages such as this one. "For it was of the Lord to harden their hearts, that they should come against Israel in battle, and that he, the Lord, might utterly destroy them." Yes, passages filled with battle and war and smiting. Every page juicy, filled with kill and destroy and war. Yes, this is the Bible you've been searching for your whole life. No more talk of love and turning the other cheek and loving your neighbor like yourself. I'm talking about good old-fashioned bloodshed. I'm talking about righteous anger towards your enemy. I'm talking about smiting them down like they did in the Old Testament times. Yes, you want the King Digadong Bible. Yes, the King Digadong Bible. Selling for $9.99 at your favorite mega church. The King Digadong Bible. Buy it now.
And who run for high public office? No one but nerds.
you don't have Newt Gingrich.
He's not a nerd. He's a chubby boy.
Oh, right.
You know, I just love that clip. And the best part about that clip is it now it gives us the intro into the What a Weenie Award. And it doesn't take much to guess that the What a Weenie Award for this episode goes to Newt Gingrich, the former Speaker of the House, who at a June 9th, 2009 GOP fundraiser made this statement.
Let me be clear. I am not a citizen of the world. I think the entire concept is intellectual nonsense and stunningly dangerous.
Now look, I get it. This guy, it doesn't take a big political scientist, it doesn't take the sharpest of minds to realize that what he was trying to do in this particular statement was rebut this by what was then Senator Obama when he was running for president when he gave a speech in Germany. And here's that clip.
Tonight I speak to you not as a candidate for president, but as a citizen. A proud citizen of the United States and a fellow citizen of the world.
Now, as I said, it does not take a big political scientist nor a major genius to realize what Gingrich is trying to do here. It is just pure partisan politics. What he is trying to do is just play the, if you want to call it the loyal opposition, go ahead. But what he is just trying to do is just be the contrarian in this whole thing. He is trying to show that he is being completely different than President Obama. But as I'm sure many of you have already heard or remember, or maybe this is the first time you're hearing this, in being contrarian to President Obama, what he has forgotten is that he is being contrarian to this famous Republican.
I speak today as both a citizen of the United States and of the world.
Yeah, you heard it right. That was Ronald Reagan giving a speech about being a citizen of the world. Listen, I'm sure by now Newt Gingrich is probably wishing he could take back that little statement. I'm pretty sure right now the chubby boy is trying to get past what he said because I'm pretty sure he's trying to kick himself in his bulbous rear end. But the thing that bothers me the most about this is that there is a point of being the loyal opposition and saying something that goes to fight against somebody's policy, and then there's a point of saying something just to prove how idiotic you can be. That statement, in and of itself, about not being a citizen of the world, is plain, good old-fashioned, 100% chubby boy idiocy. No ifs, ands, or big chubby buts about it, just plain old idiocy. Because what he is trying to say is that the problems of the world don't matter a good gosh darn to Newt Gingrich or to the Republican Party, and that is part of the reason why this Republican Party is failing. Because they fail to realize the larger picture. They are so strung out, and I think strung out is a good way to say it, because these are winning junkies. That's all they know. I have said this before, that being a Republican is completely about wanting to feel good, and right now, they don't feel good. They need every little bit that they can because they are strung out about trying to feel good about something, and right now, that's something that they need to cling on to, is putting down this president. Now, I have said before, and I will say again, that I do not agree with everything that this president's doing. I wish he would do some things differently. But I understand he cannot take on certain subjects. He cannot fight the good, strong, progressive fight that maybe, and I don't know, maybe he does want to fight it, maybe he doesn't. But there are going to be points where I'm going to disagree with him. And you know what? Guess what? That's the smart thing to be. It's okay to disagree with your leadership. It's okay to be the loyal opposition. It is not okay to say something that is pure idiocy. To say that you are not a citizen of the world is to show the limited vision of yourself as a leader, as a politician, and as a man. Because we have to start showing a greater concept of this planet. Whether you want to look at environmentalism, whether you want to look at the war, whether you want to look at economics, our inabilities to see how what we do affects global economics, affects global politics, affects global environmentalism, affects us all. As they have said before, all politics is local. Well, guess what? All environmentalism is local. All economics is now local. Everything that can affect one part of the globe can now affect the other because we are now so closely connected. We are citizens of the world. Of course we're United States citizens. Of course we're going to care about what's local to us. Of course we're going to care about our people first. But to only care about our people and to only care about the inclusiveness of your own party, to only care about going after your base, is why the Republican Party is failing. And if this is their leader, if this is who they're trying to bring out, God help them on many levels, because this guy is, if this is the face of their leadership, then they've reverted back almost 20 years to find the face of leadership. And that's just a shame, because this guy is an ethical nightmare. Lest we forget why he lost his position as the former Speaker of the House. But to not say that you are a citizen of the world is to forget these famous words by John F. Kennedy.
Our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's futures. And we are all mortal.
We are citizens of this planet. We share the most simple, basic bond that in the end, we're all human. And in the end, what affects one person across the globe will affect us here too. It is time to remember that being a citizen of this country means being a citizen of the world. And that is why Newt Gingrich is the winner of this What a Weenie Award. Okay, well, this was a very rushed episode of Indirect Democracy. I wanted to try to get this out as quickly as possible. There are a lot of important topics I want to try to get into over the next couple of months. A discussion of health care is huge. Judge Sotomayor, as I've discussed, will be a very relevant topic. The discussion about what will occur with Iran, Iraq. It's amazing that they had National Sovereignty Day and held fireworks and explosives and parties for leaving when things just aren't going to get any better over there, but they're just that excited about us leaving. But as I end this podcast, I would be remiss if I did not thank Matt Bloodwell and the guys at Megaphone for allowing me to use their song, Not Your Enemy, from the album For Crying Out Loud. You can find For Crying Out Loud and Not Your Enemy through iTunes, I suggest, and I highly suggest, actually, that you take the time to listen to the song, maybe give it a download. It's worth the 99 cents. And you can also find more about Megaphone at their website at www.megaphonemusic.net. Or at their MySpace page at myspace.com/megaphone. Once again, just want to thank you for listening, taking the time for podcast number 35 of Indirect Democracy. Of course, if you have any questions or comments, you can write me at david@indirectdemocracy.com. But until that time, take care of each other, take care of yourselves, and bye for now. Which one of these is the off button? Oh, there it is.